Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. This half hour, we'll hear from Amani Oyelowo and Trace McSorley. The Phillies have been on a roll. Now, I remember when Andrew Knapp played at Williamsport. He was, I want to say it was a third-round pick. Well, he's a first-round pick. First-round pick out of Cal. Switch-hitting catcher. I said in the show, I said, you know, that's a ball player I really like. Well, now he's on the major league level, and he's producing like this.
And the payoff. Swung on, hit deep. Yes. Down the line. If it's fair, it's gone, and it's game over.
Yeah.
Andrew Knapp has walked us off in the bottom of the 13th inning. Pinch hit, home run for Knapp. He circles the bases. His teammates await his arrival at the plate. He flips the helmet in the air, and the celebration begins.
Scott Fransky with the call on News Radio 1070 WKOK and the Phillies Network. The Phillies stay hot. Three back of the Braves, now three up on the Nationals after the Knapp walk-off homer in the 13th yesterday. Another big Phillies moment in a season that has had a lot of big moments. Right now, the Phillies would be in the playoffs on July the 2nd in the wild card game at Wrigley against the Cubs. Still three more months to play that out, but that's where they are right now. And if you were to ask any Phillies fan in March that on July 2nd that's the spot you'd be in, I think a lot of people would have taken it at that time. Big moment yesterday. Proud to have the Phillies here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Back to Penn State football now. The opener is September 1st, but it's never too early to talk about Penn State football, especially surrounding Lift for Life, which was a great success. And thank you to all the really nice people that came up, said hi, and said, hey, we listen to the show all the time. That meant a lot to hear that on Saturday. Thank you so much for that and more. Amani Oyelowo first asked about playing for Corners coach Terry Smith.
I think he, that's just extra, more pride that he puts into his work when he, the fact that he played here, and that just makes us more prideful in it too, so we play harder.
What's real expectations for John coming back this season, and how do you think last year, not that it helped him, but what do you think he learned from that experience?
I don't expect too much. I mean, I expect more out of him, but he's a great player. I already know he's going to blow the top off, and when he's healthy, he's gonna ball out and do what he does best. But I'm not expecting anything extraordinary. I'm expecting him to do what he does best.
And you guys ran together, so how much are you looking forward to seeing him get the opportunity to get back on the field because of how much work he put in?
No, I'm looking forward to it, definitely. I think it'll be great because we both played a lot of football here, and to have us trying to lead the pack, I think we'll bring those younger guys up real quick, and then we'll be able to find that powerhouse in the secondary.
Monty, it seems like you don't not only have depth in the secondary, but also versatility. You think we can expect something different, or in that line of like seeing different things than we did last year from the secondary?
Yeah, I mean, we got a lot of guys that can play multiple positions. We got, you know, I could play the corner spot and the nickel. John Reed obviously plays the nickel a lot. We got guys that just can rotate and play everything. So, like you said, we're real versatile. And then in that safety unit, you know, we got guys that are stepping up that can come down and play star as well, like Lamont Wade. He did that. And then we got, you know, guys like Nick Scott, Garrett Taylor playing big football back there. So we got a lot of the good things going back in the secondary.
With this, as I don't know how to put it, explosive or versatile as offenses can be, how important is that you can bring that to the secondary?
It's very important because, you know, you're going to see some things in games that you haven't seen in practice, and you just got to be ready for it. You got to be able to adjust, and I think we have that versatility to where we can just adjust whenever we can.
Who are some of the young corners we should maybe be looking out for that we haven't seen in a while?
Well, you guys saw a lot of Tariq. He played a lot of football for us, but I think he'll definitely take a bigger step. I think Donovan Johnson had a huge spring. He's having a great summer too, and I just got to put it together in camp so he can, you know, help contribute. But I think Steve McPherson's right there with him too, so those guys are kind of competing just to, you know, see who can bring some value to this defense, and I think they're both doing a good job.
Where are you physically now compared to when you got here in terms of weight? Height, did you grow at all?
I don't think I grew too much, but just kind of slimmed down, try to cut some body fat down and be more lean, eating healthier. So just trying to watch that kind of stuff. But other than that, yeah, just about the same weight and everything.
Is that a part of the whole season, or is that a special emphasis in the off season? Because we, you know, from the outside, we track like weights and people changing body type and stuff like that. Is that a huge focus during the off season, or is that a continual kind of thing?
It's definitely a huge focus in the off season because you got a lot more time to, you know, do that stuff. In the summer, we can cook and we can do that stuff, so we can actually buy groceries and, you know, eat healthier. And it's just an emphasis because we're working out and training so hard that you'll see the biggest impact in it. But I mean, if we do it, we try to do it as much as we can in season too. But you know, when you smell those chicken fingers at Beaver Stadium, it gets kind of hard.
who's made the biggest transformation, or who's made the most gains this offseason, do you think?
The most gains. I think Garrett Taylor's going to have a huge year. I think he's going to step up big, contribute in the secondary, and make some plays for us.
Amani Oruwariye talking about John Reed, about Garrett Taylor, about Terry Smith. He was second team all Big Ten and didn't start a single game last year. He had 4 interceptions last year. And now he heads into his senior season. Can you believe that? Senior season for Amani Oruwariye? I remember being on the phone with him the day he signed, because I had to announce his name. You know, this year, for example, I had Pat Freiermuth. So I get on the phone with him, and I said, okay. I said, Amani, I got that part down. I said, you have to help me here with the second part. So after about 3 tries, we got it. Because, look, it's their big day. You want to make sure it's right. You want to make sure it's always right. So Amani and I have always had that connection. Coming up, Trace McSorley, Penn State starting quarterback. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Should have seen the suit at last year's 4th of July party dancing to this. It's one of the reasons why this year's 4th of July party has been canceled. All right, so what? I know you're disappointed.
All right, we'll go to Plan B. All right.
Plan B, yes. Well, Plan A for Penn State football happens to be Trace McSorley at quarterback. His 3rd year as the starter. He is the unquestioned leader of this team, and that includes off-season workouts.
We do it after workouts, so we're here already. So it's not an issue of getting guys here for it. Everyone's already here and doing the team workouts. So usually it's the structured ones would be 2 times a week, and then a lot of other guys would do extra stuff on their own. And we'll get together with receivers another 1 or 2 times a week. You know, DBs will be out here doing extra work on their own. So a lot of it is just kind of, you know, how everyone can fit into it, all the extra work, but at least those 2 times a week, it's pretty structured and it's run by, I mean, kind of player-led and however we feel what we need to work on that day.
One of the extra things you did this offseason was the Manning Academy. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
That was awesome. I mean, the Mannings are, you know, first-class people. They're awesome every second. You know, Archie was asking, hey, how is this for you guys? Is this everything you want it to be? Are you getting something good out of it? And then, you know, being able to be around guys like Peyton and Eli, that they have the experience, and obviously they're 2 future Hall of Famers, that being able to just absorb anything from them and learn about those guys, what they do, how their, you know, week of preparation would be for a game. And then, you know, Cooper's awesome. He's hilarious, and he's cracking jokes. But it was an awesome experience. And being around all the other college guys, getting to meet them and really hang out with them and learn those guys outside of football. You always, you know, compete against them. You see them at all these other things, but you never really get a chance to hang out with them and see what they're like off the field. So I think that was the coolest thing, just meeting guys and getting to know them off the field.
Do you teach Eli anything about Saquon? Do you guys talk about him at all?
I got a lot of questions about Saquon. Nothing much. I mean, we just kind of talked about, you know, how he is and, you know, kind of things that I've said before, how he's going to want to know exactly how Eli's thinking in pass protection and run game and all that kind of stuff. That's, he wants to absorb all that knowledge, just like, you know, he wants to be a quarterback as far as, you know, the knowledge. And then obviously the athletic ability is something special that they're definitely going to love out there. But it was cool to kind of be able to talk with, you know, Eli and, you know, the rest of the Mannings about, you know, my experience with Saquon like and kind of what Eli can expect.
You've obviously lost a lot of playmakers from last season. Are there any that you think will be a particular challenge to replace, any individual?
You know, I think each one of them will be an individual challenge. I mean, it's you lose a guy like Deshaun, who's been here for 5 years. Mike, he's played 4 years here, and you know, guys that set records here. Obviously, Saquon with the things he's done. So really, what we're gonna need to make up for is the experience. You know, all those guys have 3-4 years under their belt of playing at Penn State and playing on the road in Big Ten games, and they've been through just about everything. So I think that's the biggest thing that, you know, we're gonna have to replace, the experience. But you know, talent-wise, we got guys coming back that are exciting to watch. They're excited, and this is their first real opportunity to get out and show what they can do on the field and show out in front of our fans and, you know, kind of take their next step. And I think I'm excited for that, because it's a lot of guys that are really eager to get that opportunity, and they're going to take it and run with it.
You're getting a lot of recognition around the country, you know, going into the season. Does that change anything for you, the way you approach your work?
No, not really. I mean, not really. All those outside awards and recognition is awesome, and I'm honored to kind of have my name thrown around where it has been so far this, you know, preseason. But I'm more focused about what I need to do right now as far as on the field with the team and do workouts and everything like that to make sure that we have the best season that we can as Penn State football. And all those other things will kind of figure themselves out. And like I said, it's an honor right now, but that's, you know, kind of all it is, just hype. And it all kind of matters what happens during the year.
Tracy mentioned trying to take the next step. You know, some players trying to take the next step. For Miles specifically, what have you seen from him, and do you think he's ready to kind of be the featured back for Penn State this season?
Yeah, Miles just came to work with the same attitude he's always had. Just keep working, and, you know, he's kind of one of those, keep his mouth shut, but he's going to work, and he's going to impress you when he does. I mean, he continues to get faster, he's filling out, getting bigger, stronger, and I think he's a guy that has been overshadowed a little bit with the guy who was in front of him. But I mean, I'm excited to see what Miles is going to do. I mean, there's a lot of people that haven't really gotten a glimpse of what he can do, even us to a certain extent. We haven't really seen what Miles can do, so I'm excited to see kind of him come out and show out and kind of get his opportunity.
Talk about the offensive line. This seems to be the best depth at that position since he's been here.
Yeah, I mean, the depth we have on the offensive line is awesome. Not only we returned 4 or 5 guys from our offensive line, our starting line last year, but we got these young guys coming in that are pushing and providing depth for us. Now we being able to have 2, 3, 4 lines going through practice, it's been awesome. So, I mean, the more, you know, people always ask you, how are you going to replace a guy like Saquon? I think part of it is we're going to have all that depth and at the offensive line. It's going to be one of our strengths this year, and I think that's something that I'm really excited about. You know, with our offensive line, they've continued to grow and get better. A lot of guys were kind of young and inexperienced the last couple of years. Now they're getting in their 3rd, 4th years, and it's kind of their opportunity to kind of be the guys up front, and they're ready and they're excited about it. So, and I think we're going to be able to improve from our offensive line standpoint as far as our run game. They're going to be able to, you know, they're working together now. The offensive line is a position where the more you work together, the better things are for you guys. So I'm excited about that, and especially with the young depth that we got behind them.
Is there anything that changes from your perspective having an offensive line like that? Is there something maybe in the offense that opens up, or is there something you can do as a quarterback that you might not have been able to do before?
Not really. I mean, kind of as an offense you go, as your offensive line goes, and they've been great the last couple of years, but I think this year they're kind of going to be a strong point for us, and that's something that, you know, probably a lot of people wouldn't have said in the last couple of years. So I'm excited for those guys. They've been working their butts off this entire offseason, and really for the last 3 years, and kind of, you know, the long, prolonged kind of chance for them to come out and be that strong point for us. I'm excited for them.
Chris, how excited are you to see John Reed be able to go out and do his thing offseason?
I'm excited for him. I mean, he's kind of been one of those dudes. He, you know, had a tough break, kind of a non-contract, really injury that, you know, set him back and put him out all of last year. But he was always with the team last year, kind of stuck with us. He was able to do opportunity with the internship and kind of helped him out where he was able to do some rehab there, and he wasn't necessarily on the field, so he didn't really miss too much as far as missing summer workouts last year. But seeing him come back and be able to be on the field, it's awesome. From a guy that, you know, a little bit more than a year ago was, you know, couldn't walk and he was on crutches and all that, and now being able to see him and what he's been able to do and how he's looking right now, he looks good, and I think we're all happy that he's going to be back for us.
Many think that with Barkley gone, that the focus is on you. How do you react to that? They're trying to take you out now.
You know, kind of, I've always approached the game that I'm going to need to, you know, the defense is going to try and take what I do away. So it's not like my approach doesn't change too much. Obviously, with a guy like Saquon, teams will focus more, put more guys in the box, and, you know, teams might show us some different things now. But I think if they're not going to try, if they're going to try to take what I do away, then we'll be able to open up something else for us in our offense. And I think that's the beauty of what we do, is, you know, kind of what we've done the last couple of years. Is, all right, you want to take away Saquon, we have all these other options on the outside. And I think it's just kind of the mentality that we have in offense. You try and take one thing away, we got answers for you.
Can you talk about the depth in the QB room that you have now? When you came in, as I remember, I think you were second team while you were redshirting.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, you guys just seem like you're kind of loaded there.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to get these new guys coming into the quarterback position. You know, Tommy's obviously going into his fourth year. Sean coming in his second year. You've got Jake going in, and you got like Schuster and Will coming in also. So, you know, we talk about all the guys that we got up, you know, in the quarterback room. It's awesome kind of be able to have those guys that, one, they're young, they're eager, so it gives me an opportunity to teach them, and they're asking me, you know, what did I see? So I'm able to explain to some of these young guys that might not have that experience or might not be able to see things how I've been able to see them over the last couple of years. So to be able to kind of talk with those guys and kind of have those young guys pushing all the way up through, it's awesome kind of be able to see them, then them be able to step in and operate the offense and do what they do. So I think the depth that we have, obviously, this last couple of years, being able to, the coach has done a great job recruiting, bringing in good guys that, you know, good leaders, guys who can, you know, shoulder the load as a quarterback, but also physically talented and physically impressive. So, I mean, it's great having those guys there.
What have you seen from Tommy so far this offseason, and do you think you've learned, you know, a lot from him, or learned anything at all from him?
Yeah, I mean, Tommy just, he comes in and works every single day. He doesn't really care that, you know, what his role is. He's going to come in and work. He's going to do his thing. I mean, he, every single year he just keeps getting stronger and stronger. And, you know, you wouldn't think he's a, you know, he was putting up 300 the other day on bench. I mean, he's, you wouldn't see that when you look at him, but the dude's just physically impressive. I mean, he's so smooth in, you know, his running and kind of what he does on the field. And then he goes in the weight room, puts up weight that you just, you know, really look at him, you wouldn't expect. But, I mean, it's awesome kind of have him, and on top of kind of his attitude. And, you know, he's one of the best dudes on our team. And, you know, I think everyone on our team looks at him as a leader. And that's something that sometimes isn't always said out of a backup quarterback, for kind of how he approaches everything and kind of his attitude towards everything. It's awesome kind of to see how everyone views him as one of the leaders of this entire team and not just on offense.
And that happens with universal respect when you make a decision like he made. Look, we are in an era where if you don't like how it's going for you right now, you move on to something else. You have between 700 and 800 transfers in basketball now every year. You don't have that volume of transfers right now in football, but you do have many more transfers today than you did 5 years ago. Michigan, for example, and this is not a cutting comment, this is just a factual comment, Michigan's quarterback recruiting has been through transfers. Jake Rudock, O'Korn, right now Shea Patterson. I mean, that's how they've recruited, transfers. and you're seeing that more and more guys transferring, you're going to gain instant respect and instant credibility in your locker room when you make a decision like Tommy Stevens made, that he felt that this place, this locker room, this football team, this university was the best place for him when he could have transferred in May. He could have. He could have transferred in May. Graduate. Could have played this year. Didn't do it. Miles Sanders is going to gain instant credibility in the locker room because guess what? He stayed patient the entire time through the process, learning around Saquon Barkley and waiting his turn. Who waits their turn? This happens in a lot of professions as well as colleges. I think some people have missed out on opportunities because they ran out of patience when just a little bit more would have opened the door to something bigger and better by being where they happened to be at the time. Now, it's easy for me to say it because obviously that's been exactly what's happened in my life. I was very patient before I finally got the job I got. Some people said too patient. I think it worked out just right. After all, I get to work with Sean. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And if you get an opportunity to check out the Steve Jones Show podcast today, you'll hear from Trace McSorley, Tommy Stevens, Koa Farmer, and Amani Oyewariye of the Nittany Lion football team. Lift for Life, by the way, was a huge success on Saturday. We'll get the final numbers in a couple of weeks. I mentioned earlier how baseball can't breathe in the cycle because the NBA dominates the cycle. I don't care whether it's the playoffs, the finals, the draft, or now free agency. And Keith Smith from RealGM.com joins us again. Keith, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's start with the LeBron. I don't think anybody's surprised he ended up choosing the Lakers. In your opinion, what is the domino effect of the decision?
Yeah, well, it was really interesting. You know, with LeBron, that was kind of rumored to be the top spot. That's the place that I had him pegged for quite some time now, and then it obviously came to fruition. I think that might have factored into Paul George's decision to re-up with Oklahoma City, because they never got the sense that he wanted to be in L.A. with LeBron and everything that comes with that, for whatever his reasons may have been on that situation for Paul George. And then after that, that meant Philadelphia didn't get him. Now Philly re-ups with J.J. Redick today on a contract, and then they're still going to have some space to do something else whenever they're ready to add another player or two, or see however they spin that forward. And then you've got the Cleveland Cavaliers now are probably headed for a full-scale rebuild sometime, if not this coming season, within the next year or so.
Yeah, Colin Sexton was a teammate of LeBron James for 3 days. All right. So let's get to the intriguing part. A year from now, Kawhi Leonard is a free agent if the contract sticks the way it is. So what are the options with Kawhi Leonard? And then give me the importance for San Antonio that they want to make sure that if they make a move, they get return.
Yeah, so where the Spurs are at right now is they continue to say they hope to be able to patch things up and make things right with Kawhi Leonard. Now, whether that happens or not, we'll see. It seems like that situation might be too broken for that to happen, and maybe the Spurs know that, but they're just kind of paying that lip service out there to everyone. Now, what they're going to do is they're not going to just let him walk. They will take whatever the best offer they can get is. But the most important thing to know is they're going to do what's best for the San Antonio Spurs. They're under no obligation to do something great for Kawhi Leonard or help him out, especially considering he doesn't want to be in San Antonio anymore. So they're going to do what they need to do, whether that's the Lakers or not. That remains to be seen, and we'll see, you know, where that goes. The Lakers, to their credit, what they're doing right now is they are only signing players to one-year deals beyond LeBron James, because what they're looking to do is retain as much flexibility as possible, whether that's to sign Kawhi Leonard outright as a free agent next summer if they don't trade for him this year, or if they do still trade for him, to then have flexibility to add pieces around him and LeBron James going forward.
Is the door open to Kawhi Leonard sitting out this season and then becoming a free agent?
No, because what would end up happening is if he sat out this entire season, unless it was one of these, I just don't feel healthy enough to play or that, but if he just openly sits out, what ends up happening is it then defaults back to the Spurs. Spurs would have to agree to let him become a free agent, or they could hold him to still honoring that year that he did not end up playing for them. So I don't think you'll see Kawhi Leonard sit out. What you could see is him going to training camp if he really wanted to, and then, you know, shut it down in training camp or fairly early in the season and say, you know, I'm just not feeling right. I don't feel like I could play. But at that point, I think you'd start to see the league and others get involved and say, hey, let's get this done rather than just be a black eye for everybody.
Would Ingram and Kuzma be two guys the Lakers would not be willing to part with?
I think more so on the Kuzma standpoint, just from a roster building. If you have Brandon Ingram, now Ingram is the better prospect than Kuzma,
yes.
But if you have Ingram, do you need Ingram, LeBron, Kawhi? They all play, you know, overlapping positions. That becomes a little bit of a mess fit-wise, where Kuzma can slide up and play the four much more often. So what I think you could see is them potentially offer Ingram. There's a report out there today that they made a pretty big offer of Ingram, Kuzma, Josh Hart, and picks, and it didn't get anywhere yet. I would think if that offer is really on the table, that's something the Spurs need to think very seriously about.
Right. Now the Philadelphia situation. Sure. You mentioned in a previous answer, Keith, about re-signing on a one-year deal, J.J. Redick. How disappointed should Philly fans be that they really, in the end, weren't players for any of the big guys?
I think there's going to be some natural disappointment in there, because I think people are looking off the season they're coming off of, you know, the really great run at the end of the year to get all the way up into the three seed, and then the big, you know, first round win, and then going up against Celtics in the second round. I think people were assuming, you know, hey, Joel Embiid proved he could stay healthy. Ben Simmons is for real. We've got these other good young guys here like Dario Saric on the team, and we're really, you know, something we're building here. And I think they thought they could come away with a LeBron James or a Paul George as a free agent, and it just didn't happen. I think for LeBron, this was much more of a decision of Los Angeles being where he and his family wanted to be. And then for Paul George, I think he looks at it as, I've already got the ready-made team that, if everything breaks right and we stay healthy, can contend in Oklahoma City. We're in Philadelphia. There might be a little bit more work, and I don't know that he wanted to be part of shepherding along a young team to help him get there. So they missed out on those guys. Now, they're still going to be involved on Kawhi if they want to be. They've still got the pieces that they can go and try to make a trade if they want to be there. But free agent-wise, yeah, they missed out. But J.J. Redick, great fallback plan, fit perfectly last year. And then they still got cap space to make another move or two to continue to bolster the roster.
Say nothing happens. Does this put more pressure on Markel Fultz to produce and start to show the potential Philadelphia thought he has when they picked him number one overall?
Yeah, it definitely does, because right now, if you look at their, let's assume they're starting five, it's all coming back, and assume it stays intact with Embiid, Sarge, Simmons, Covington, and Redick, that really leaves a pretty thin bench. They lost Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova have both left town. They were two key contributors. They were basically the entirety of the bench, along with T.J. McConnell for the vast majority of the playoffs. So now you've still got McConnell there, but he is what he is, which is a really good backup point guard or, you know, high-end player. So what they need Fultz to do is come in and be ready to score probably somewhere in the, you know, range of 10, 12 points per game for them to really get to where they want to be as a team this coming season.
We know the high-profile ones. Obviously, Chris Paul staying with Houston. You mentioned Paul George staying with Oklahoma City and LeBron James moving from Cleveland to the Lakers. Has there been an under-the-radar signing or move that you sat back and said, you know what, that's savvy, they made a nice move there?
Yeah, I tend to be a little bit on the rosier side of things in free agency. I can generally find the upside for everybody, but I really like what the Celtics did in retaining Aaron Baines. I think they know they're going to have to get through Philly and Toronto to get to where they want to be in the East. If Baines is their best guy to defend Jonas Valanciunas with the Raptors and obviously Joel Embiid with the 76ers, so for Baines to be back in the fold, and what he did was he took a little less money to give them the flexibility retaining the entire mid-level exception, which really helps. I like that move quite a bit. And then just another one out there was the Utah Jazz retaining Derek Favors. That just happened today. Right. I really think that was a good move. The Jazz are not in a position to use cap space, so they structured a really smart deal with Favors, which is going to pay him a lot of money this year, but then it's a partial or non-guarantee for that second year, which protects them in case they want to head in a different direction. So I really think they did a good job as well.
When I asked the question, my gut thought you were going to say Baines. So... I have to ask you about Denver. Denver made the move, and I agree with it as to what they did with Jokic, and then what they did in the draft. How much better is Denver? I'm not saying they're a title contender or anything like that, but what have they done with their stock? Because even they threw their name out there, like they're rumored with LeBron.
Yeah, you know, I think they wanted to get involved with LeBron. I don't know that that was really ever going to happen, per se. I don't think that was a consideration from the LeBron side of things. But, you know, as far as Denver, what I really like what they did was, you know, they're going to retain Jokic. They retained Will Barton. How much better they are, you know, we'll see. And I think a lot of that revolves around them getting and being healthy this coming season. That's going to be a big thing for them because their roster is not going to look that different. I like that they picked Michael Porter Jr. in the draft when he fell to them, but he's not going to give them very much this coming season, if anything at all. So I think it's kind of what you see is what you get, with maybe a couple more moves around the edges for the Nuggets.
Have the Celtics gone to Best Buy to get Robert Williams an alarm clock?
They need to if they haven't, or get them some kind of personal valet or an Alexa system that'll wake him up or whatever. It's just a really not a great story. You can tell from their comments coming out of the front office, Danny Ainge, as well as a couple other members of the coaching staff and front office team there in Boston, that they're not happy. They very much were going to deal with this internally, and they're not going to let it become a big thing. But they're making it known to Robert Williams that you're a professional now. Our expectation is you're at a bare minimum where you need to be when you need to be there.
Keith, when you look at the Summer League, what are you watching?
Yeah, the big thing for me is I like to watch the second and third year guys. So the guys who are, you know, headed into their second year, headed into their third year, they're not borderline dominant or at least visibly better than everybody else. That should send up some question marks on a lot of these players if they just should be that much better for that. So those are the guys I tend to look at. I'm obviously excited to see the rookies for the first time to see what they can do and bring to the league. And then there's always, by usually the second or third day of summer league, there's somebody who's starting to stand out. It's generally one of these veteran guys, fourth, fifth year pro, who looks like he's working his way back into the NBA and starts to draw some buzz. So those guys are interesting, but really focus in on those second and third year players and just watching them to make sure that they're dominating summer league as they should be going forward.
Keith, what did you think of Kevin Durant's contract from his point of view and from the Golden State point of view?
Yeah, and for let's start with the Warriors first. I really like it because they save a little bit of money off the tax. He didn't take exactly as much money as he could have, and I think that helps the Warriors quite a bit. They're looking at a pretty hefty tax bill almost no matter what, so that helps there. From the Durant side, it made sense because now he can opt out again. It, with the Warriors, he can get that full max deal because they'll finally have his full bird rights, or he gives himself that protection. Let's say they win a third title and he says, what more is there to do here? Maybe he does want to go somewhere else and challenge himself and do something bigger, and that's open to him now because he has that ability because of that contract that he signed with it, being able to be a free agent again in 2019.
Was there a point in going through all this and for years and years, did you ever envision the NBA would be at this point where it was dominating news cycles in the off season?
You know, I did, but I love the NBA, so it's really hard for me. This is what I focus on. But this is amazing for the league as a whole. When you look at the fact that the salary cap continues to grow, that means revenues are strong. Teams are willing to spend money. Teams aren't doing a lot of these big luxury tax avoidance maneuvers, which says to me there's a confidence from the owners that they're going to make a lot of money. The NBA is arguably right now the second most popular league in the United States behind the NFL. The NFL is king and probably will be for quite some time, but the NBA is perfectly content to kind of dominate their corner. One thing that they positioned, which something David Stern started and wanted to do, is they want this to be a 12-month-a-year game where you're thinking about it, you're focused on it, and all of that. They're really close. If they get a couple more trades like Kyrie Irving's to drag out like last year, they're just about there.
One last comment, and then we'll move on, and that will be about the draft. The NBA, of course, has received some outside pressure about what to do with one and done, Keith. And that's outside pressure. You and I both know, do they really want to hire more scouts? Do they want to scout the AAU? Do they want to scout high school basketball games? Of course not. How do you envision this eventually playing out with one and done being eliminated under the collective bargaining agreement?
Yeah, I think initially what we're going to see is that it is just eliminated, that players can come back in. I think in the next round of the CBA, you might see some tweaks come where what the league does is they either set it up similarly to Major League Baseball, where it's if you go to school, you're at school for a year or two, and then you can come out after that. Or they may set it up where there's something dumb where if you're drafted straight out of high school, maybe you have to spend a year or two in the NBA G League, which would cover them and protect these teams, because the teams, you mentioned it, they don't want to be in these high school gyms, but that seems now inevitable. They're going to have to do that. But then the other thing is they don't want one of these guys taking up one of their 15-man roster spots. This isn't, you know, the NFL or Major League Baseball where you have a, you know, 53-man or a 40-man roster. There's only 15 spots, and they're all pretty precious. So what you want to be able to do is give the guys who have a chance to have an impact for you this year. You don't have room for these guys who are strictly a developmental prospect. So I think you're going to see some form of tweak where it's allowed, but it's allowed in a way where those guys are going to have to spend some time in the minors as they grow to a full 30-team minor league system, and that'll be something that I think the league's going to look to put in to just to protect their teams.
The outstanding Keith Smith, RealGM.com. Keith, thanks for carving out some time for us today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Keith Smith, RealGM.com, on all the NBA movement, of which, as expected, there was a lot of it, starting with the big domino of LeBron James going to the L.A. Lakers. We'll come back, wrap it up. We're going to talk about injury reports in college football and how the Big Ten has asked the NCAA to look into it. In other words, with gambling, should we be putting out the reports? We'll talk about it in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Here's an interesting note from that happened actually last month, but it finally surfaced today. As we know, in the National Football League, you get injury reports literally every day. You know, doubtful, questionable, right? Out. Well, the Big Ten has asked the NCAA to consider developing a national college football injury reporting system. And the reason is because of the Supreme Court decision on sports gambling. Now, right now, three states have that. Nevada, obviously, New Jersey, and Delaware. Others are going to quickly follow suit. Now, if you heard, Penn State President Dr. Eric Barron did request the legislature to hold off on having college games, Penn State Pitt Temple, on Pennsylvania Sportsbook, should have come to fruition, for a couple of years just to study it. Now, he is absolutely right to make that recommendation. He's just looking out for the university, the game, and obviously trying to figure out the ramifications of all this. So he's absolutely right. Realistically, though, I don't think I can see the legislature, which is looking at money here, that they would pull it off the sports book if Pennsylvania starts it, and they may do so in 90 days. Because if you look at sportsbook in this state, who are the three biggest drivers on sportsbook? The Eagles, the Steelers, and Penn State football. Now, you're going to take Penn State football, one of your drivers of revenue, off the table if you're the state? Because the state will be in charge of it. So Dr. Barron was absolutely right. I absolutely respect the fact that he made that request. If I was in his shoes, I would have made the same request. At the same time, now let's flip it to from ideology, which is correct, to realism. And realistically, I can't picture the state doing that for the reasons I just outlined. Your top three are going to be the Eagles, Steelers, and Penn State football, right? John, I mean, I don't think I'm wrong about that. So now they're talking about putting out injury reports. The Big Ten made this request. The athletic directors got together. They proposed to the NCAA Football Oversight Committee a couple of weeks ago what would be the first ever weekly national injury reporting mandate. The ADs claim an injury report is necessary to protect the integrity of the sport. That's why the NFL started doing it in the late 40s. They say such a move would alter one of the more ingrained, long-standing traditions in college football. Coaches are never comfortable about injury reports, and I completely understand that. I would be that same way if I were in that position. Gene Smith of Ohio State said, "We have to be more transparent. In football, we're going to kill this idea of gamesmanship around injuries. We don't know if you want to report as many days as the NFL, but clearly on Mondays, if somebody is injured from Saturday, and you know they're not going to play the following Saturday." The NCAA has tabled this. They want to talk about it more, but they're willing to listen. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.